What's up, everybody? We have 10 minutes here with esteemed colleague Ryan Muckenhern, and we are going to talk about the idea and concept of, and probably get into some specific examples of, brush-busting cartridges. This was a term that was relatively new to me. I don't know, maybe it's not new to a lot of you, though, but it's the idea of, fill in the blank, Ryan.
Large caliber, lower velocity, pushing through the brambles.
Right.
To get to the critter on the other side. It's hard for me to even say.
Round-nosed.
Typically.
Yeah.
Yep.
And how, what kind of areas are people finding themselves in this kind of a situation? Is it generally probably the dense foliage regions?
Do we just go straight into fact or fiction at this point?
No, I want to address Jim's question because it's a good question. I was introduced to the term brush buster by either my father or his hunting partner, Joe, at a younger age in a deer camp. They were talking about the merits of a particular cartridge, which I don't recall.
It's the first thing I've ever heard you not recall.
Because I was not enamored by the idea after they had explained it. I mean, point blank, they said that's a brush buster cartridge. You shoot through the trees and you hit your critter. And I was fresh off of hunter safety, so I'm like a 12-year-old.
Is this some sort of test?
And I'm remembering what happens at deer camp stays at deer camp. And then I'm thinking, now this doesn't seem right. But it's a term that is thrown around maybe less now because perhaps these cartridges have fallen out of favor, mm-hmm. but certainly still thrown around, and its validity is often questioned. And so maybe we'll do more on that later. But an example of a brush, we talked about this earlier before we started, saying the word brush buster is hard. An example of a brush buster cartridge, 4570.
Okay, classic.
Yes.
I mean, when you say brush buster,
4570.
That's the cartridge that comes to mind.
Yes. 444 Marlin, 450 Bushmaster. We have this beautiful Hornady cartridge board here.
Quite lovely.
We have a couple of examples on here, like the 450 Bushmaster, which is a pretty interesting cartridge.
It is. Straight wall.
Yeah. The 450 Marlin. And we'll even say the 405 Winchester because it fits that.
We got some of those.
We do.
Teddy Roosevelt's cartridge.
We do. So this would be kind of a classic example of what a brush buster might look like or might be defined as. I've also heard the 30-30-32 Winchester Special, mm-hmm. 375 Winchester, all of these things lumped into that category.
Mm-hmm.
So, Mark, you've posed a great question. Fact, fallacy. I think it's a fallacy.
I would agree with that statement.
Yes. I think...
You're asking something to kind of... Number one, actually, what is considered, to kind of be in that category or group of cartridges for that application, number one, the reasoning behind it doesn't really make sense to me.
You're kind of shooting at something you can't see?
Yep.
Well, it's bigger, heavier, slower, more surface diameter. I mean, you definitely have more mass there. You're talking about a bigger chunk of lead going downrange. It just doesn't all make two and two for me.
Bullets don't behave well when they hit things.
Right.
Not intended targets, anyway. And while this may not be categorized as a brush buster cartridge, the 308 Winchester, the one and only deer my little brother has ever harvested, he shot, and when taking this thing apart, we couldn't find an entrance hole in the conventional spot.
Okay.
But it was very much not alive, and it died immediately. And so we keep looking around and find an odd shaped hole in the neck that upon pulling the hide, the cape up over the neck roast portion of this was almost perfectly a keyhole in the neck. And the bullet on the offside, after having gone through the cervical vertebrae, lodged somewhere in the muscle, mangled and disrupted as you would expect it. And I asked my brother, I said, well, where did you aim, Brad? And he's all right behind the shoulder, just like they taught us in hunter safety. And I thought, well, that's interesting. And there was a twig, and I'll classify it as a twig, not a branch, but a twig that was broken off. Like from his deer stand, you could very clearly see where this slightly larger than a number two Ticonderoga pencil had been snapped. presumably by that 165 grain federal.
Because you had gone immediately after this too, because you were all up in his grill from when I heard this story, yeah. And it was a little bit more in the longer form.
Hey, he's my little brother, you know,
right?
So, yeah.
And you went and immediately tested this gun to see, well, you know, maybe it's shooting.
Does it
wrong.
Shoot? Yeah. Does it shoot? Does it not? And it's dead nuts.
And it was right on the money.
Yeah.
Can I ask, just in this scenario, because I'm curious, the distance, like kind of between the twig and the animal.
I would say that it was no more than like 30 yards. It was very okay. close.
So, but somewhat, so, I mean, it wasn't like right, like a screen right in, you know, like a foot in front of the
right.
animal or something.
No,
like
it, yeah. it was a close shot.
Mm-hmm.
And it was evident at that point in time that that bullet at its velocity, which is higher than a 45-70 or a 450 Marlin or whatever, made a major redirection, like major. So, you know, we're talking like this. That bullet immediately destabilized and happened to hit a deer in the neck. So I'm not a fan of the practice of brush busting with cartridges because I don't think it works that good.
It really goes into the idea, though, that I think a lot of times people, there's a misconception out there of just how bullets fly and, mm-hmm. and what's happening to them as they're flying, because oftentimes our brains can't perceive everything they've done by the time they hit the target. You know, at 100 yards even, you pull the trigger and you almost immediately hear a ting
yeah.
you're shooting at steel. But really, actually, if you were to have like the world's greatest slow motion, high frame, whatever camera, you would see, I mean, it's a physical object moving through the air. It has to go from one point to another, and things can affect it. Gravity, wind, obstacles.
Like, you can't defy the physics of the
You can't defy the physics of, yeah. And now, while if I threw a bullet or, you know, or a projectile at a target, I'm not throwing it nearly as hard as the bullet would be, or the gun would be shooting it out. So it doesn't have all of that energy behind it necessarily. But if you threw it and it hit something on its way to your intended target, I mean, it would deflect off quite a bit. And so now you just sort of supercharge the whole equation. And there's no reason, I guess, why it wouldn't still deflect somehow. It may deflect a little bit less or in a slightly different manner when being shot out of a gun, but it would still...
Like, I could see it covering more distance more quickly.
Well, yeah.
But I would think that as we increase the velocity of the projectile, the disruption would actually be greater.
Hmm.
You know what I mean? Like a tossed golf ball might deflect, you know, you hit the pin, ink goes off, but like a bullet, like, rah.
Well, I mean, yeah. So if it deflects, let's say, if it deflects 1 degree and it's traveling, I'm going to make up a number. I don't know how fast I would throw a projectile. I don't know, 30 feet per second, 50 per feet per second. No.
I mean, I figured you had like a low 90s fastball.
I have no idea what it would be if it
Jim's
left my hand.
Guy.
But it's going to be a lot less. It's going to be a lot less than 25, 2700, whatever feet per second, right? So if it deflects 1 degree when I just toss it, that 1 degree will sort of, what am I trying to say?
Extrapolate.
It'll extrapolate less maybe or more maybe than would, I don't know, however much it's going to deflect off to the side. It's going to happen sooner in a shorter distance from the obstacle to where it lands. It's going to happen sooner, and it's going to seem to deflect more in that shorter amount of time than it would if it were going 2,500 feet per second and it hit. It might still deflect 1 degree, but it's going to make it a great distance beyond that point of deflection before it might travel to the side or whatever the same amount as it did when I tossed it. Mm-hmm. I think that's what I was getting at.
Okay.
So it would you? I mean, that's how I picture it.
In my head, that's what I think.
I also think
if you watch high-speed video of bullets being shot into 10% ballistics gelatin, which is a very soft material, and you watch path of entry, and it doesn't really, or I should say path post-entry, it doesn't really seem to make a difference if it's a 45 ACP at 900 feet per second or a 3378 Weatherby at 3,300 feet per second. When they hit that soft, square face of that gelatin, they immediately begin to like yaw and divert their path. And that's a very like squishy material. Mm-hmm. It's not something hard.
It's not rigid.
Makes sense, too, though. I mean, they're rotating, so there's that frictional force of the rotation and stuff. I also have to wonder, too, how does it affect it if you're shooting, if you're brush busting, so to speak? Now, the thing is, you when you're brush busting or whatever, you're probably not doing it at great distances.
Jim did air quotes.
You're probably not doing it at great distances. And I guess I can't really speak in super informatively to the exact projectiles that are going to be used. But we've talked about cup and core bullets. We've talked about solid bullets, you know, copper bullets. And I'd have to imagine if you had a jacketed bullet, for example, that could probably screw with the jacket a little bit. And then, I mean, would that cause issues? I mean, again, we're not talking about super long range stuff, but what if it started, the jacket starts separating in some spots before it even gets there? I mean, that's going to affect.
Oh, it's going to affect the whole, like, flight dynamic. And then all of a sudden we've got, like, this rudder out here. Yeah. And potentially creating instability.
Potentially, you know, multiple pieces of the bullet traveling downrange. You look at, you know, maybe like, an all copper bullet versus maybe more of a target style bullet, which, you know, I think wouldn't be considered in that brush busting category, but they're definitely going to act differently when they hit something.
I agree. Mm-hmm. And I should back up and say that this is not a situation in which, like, you hit a twig and your bullet veers off at a 90 degree angle from, no, it's not like that, but it's certainly enough to get you to a point that it's like, that is not a reliable thing to do.
Right.
Like, it's not going to work that great, or could completely wheels fall off.
Right. You know, and I think when I asked like the distance earlier, what I was had in my mind was and I'm not advocating shooting through brush at game. So let's just, you know, make that clear. Right. But if you're going to change, you know, the path or the vector of that bullet or whatever, if it impacts something prior to getting to your intended target, if that thing is 30 yards away, you know,
that's a long
angle
time.
Is going to extrapolate over time. If it's 2 inches away or a foot away, like, even if it's affected, like, it's still going to be closer than I guess it would have been otherwise. Like I said, I'm not advocating. I'm just trying to think. I'm thinking through the brush busting process here.
Right.
I don't think it works.
Yeah.
It's kind of my, I don't think it works reliably. I'll put it that way. Because I undoubtedly, somebody listening to this is like, no, I absolutely grease that.
Right. And sometimes you're going to hit something and it's going to hit it in the neck and it's going to tip over.
Yep.
Right?
Yeah, like your brother did.
Yeah.
You also have to ask yourself, too, I think, before you're thinking about doing something like this, are you the kind of person who, in a unimpeded situation by brush, are you the kind of person who says, oh, that gun doesn't shoot sub-MOA, wouldn't hunt with it? If you're saying that, then why would you consider shooting through brush?
That's a good point.
It's going to make it probably shoot a bit greater than 1 MOA.
Yeah.
Can we get a big, giant shrub in the range?
I'm not against it.
Stick a shrub in the range and just shoot and see what kind of groups we get out of a shrub?
The shrub test, the scientific shrub test.
Here we have
look at this. It's a rhododendron.
Here we have our benchmark brush.
If we're going to do it, I think we have to use brush endemic to the region. So we're in south central Wisconsin here. Jim and I were looking at trees yesterday. We saw some oaks. We saw some ash trees. We saw some pine trees.
You know what I think would be good also? Well, and I don't even know what it's called. This is what I call it, that red brush. You see it down kind of in...
the dogwood.
That's dogwood? Just the
bright,
super...
Bright red?
Bright, yeah. Dogwood. Very twiggy.
I tell you what, if you shot through that Japanese knotweed, it'd swallow the bullet hole. You'd never see it.
It'd never come out.
It would never.
We don't know where it goes.
No. It would probably go down and do a Pixar movie about ants and...
I've seen Stargate. I know what happens.
Yeah, it would...
comes out on some other parallel universe.
Right? I have not seen that. I would think, are we over time here?
We are over time. People are pretty used to
as per usual. Okay, I just want to make sure we're still on track.
But we should definitely try and keep it
short.
Concise. Here,
well, here's my thought. I guess I don't really have anything like super crazy to base this on. But Ryan, you know, you were talking about these cartridges. You know, at time were probably more in favor than they are now. Popular cartridges. I think the firearms themselves that they were in. You're talking about, you know, lightweight, short, handy lever guns, which are like great for carrying in the woods, long distances, easy to wield. So my gut tells me is that these guns / the cartridge that they were chambered in were used in scenarios like tight quarters, you know, closer range shots. And my guess is guys kind of what we pointed out earlier. We're shooting through brush occasionally and knocking
some
stuff down.
Some maybe work better than the others. I could see that absolutely being the case. Gentleman had a 25-35 Winchester, and a gentleman had a 32 Winchester Special. We would elect the 32 Winchester Special, the better brush buster for that. I think that's sound.
Yeah. But I think, don't you think it's just like a, or it's possibly just a case of like just success by association, even sure. though maybe it wasn't necessarily better. You just kind of got lucky, but it happened, probably, and so you're like, yeah, heck yeah, that works.
It was probably also a little bit of, I can see this being somewhat the scenario where you're not setting out with the intention of brush busting, but you want to have a big old bad boy of a cartridge that, mm-hmm. well, if I have to, mm-hmm. it's going to mm-hmm. bust through and mm-hmm. knock down what I'm trying to shoot.
Yes.
And maybe that is also part of the thing that's changed. Maybe people have changed up their tactic. I don't know what it is, but yeah. I don't know. I'm just thinking.
I agree.
I question the merit of the concept.
What are your thoughts on brush busting cartridges? Let us know. We'd be curious.
Yes.
With that said, thanks everybody for listening, and we'll catch you next time. Bye.
See you.